About 3.5 years ago, my son Micah was, I don't know, what, probably 1.5 years old, I guess the math would work out. And he was learning to talk, and he was learning things. And some of you have heard this story before, or a form of it anyway. And so we were playing at home. We would play with blocks, you know, just the little blocks. And these blocks didn't just have letters on them. They also had numbers, and they also had math symbols, like plus, minus, equals. I don't know what a one-year-old, come on, silliness. But anyway, so Micah got to where he would grab the blocks, and he would find the plus sign, and he would grab it, and he would say, Daddy, Daddy, or Dada, because he probably didn't say Daddy yet, Dada, and he would grab the plus sign, or point at the plus sign, and say, Dada. I was like, okay, I like plus, I like adding, I don't know, no idea what's going on. And then, you know, we would drive to church, and he would point up, and he'd say, Dada, Dada, and I work here. Okay, and, you know, whatever. There were lots of things that he would see and point out, and I didn't know what he was talking about because he was one. And then one day, it was in April, and my friend Asher was preaching here, guest preaching one morning. And so I was sitting over here where Eric and family are sitting. And I was sitting with Micah because, I don't know, that's how it went that day. So I was sitting with him during the sermon, and Micah was pointing up at the fan, and he's going, Dada, Dada, and the fans were not running that day, as they are not today, so that it was very helpful so that you can see that the fans have 4 blades and not 5 or whatever other fans might have. And at some point in all of that, I realized that the thing that he was pointing to, what is the thing that all of these have in common, as he said, Dada, Aaron knows, she's got the smirk. The thing they have in common is that he was pointing at things that looked like the cross on top of the church, which you can't see. It's up there. Just you'll have to. It didn't fall down, right? It's up there. And these fans, it's a plus sign. It's the cross. And so I realized, oh goodness gracious me, my son is identifying the cross. There's one, and there's one, and there's one, and there's a lot of them around. There's one. The cross with me. And I found that a little intimidating, and I found that kind of funny, but I was like, wow, so he identifies the cross with me, with his dad. And eventually I tried to teach him that the cross means something other than me. you know, we'll see. When he comes back in, we can check, see what he thinks the cross means. You know, I don't wear a cross or anything like that, but he figured out, I guess I have them on this thing, so I wear them sometimes, on this stole here. Micah figured out that the cross somehow had to do with me. Now, the cross is a common symbol. It's a thing that's around a lot. My friend's son, he would drive around town, and he would ask her, Mom, why do churches have crosses on them all the time? What's that about? And she tried to explain it to him about how, oh, now the fans are going on, I see. About how Jesus died on the cross and things like that. And her son was very concerned and confused about this. He couldn't figure out why they had this symbol of how Jesus died on things. He thought, wasn't that really morbid and creepy, Mom? And poor Mom she didn't quite know what to say. It's easy for people to misunderstand what the cross means or to get confused about what the cross means because it's a symbol that's all over the place in Christian circles. It's easy to misunderstand what the cross is. Now, in our gospel lesson today, does anybody remember last week's reading? Because this week's gospel lesson comes right after last week. So last week, Jesus asks, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. So, good day for Peter last week, and he had reason to be feeling pretty good about himself. And all the disciples had reason to be feeling pretty good about themselves. They knew who Jesus was. Jesus has said, yes, I am the Messiah. I am the one who has come to restore the kingdom of Israel, to bring about God's reign on earth. And then immediately after that comes today's reading, which has a little different flavor to it. Jesus started telling the disciples exactly what it meant that he was the Messiah. That he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. And they definitely stopped listening before that last phrase, because that didn't make any sense at all. And they really got focused on this business about Jesus suffering and dying, and at the hands of the chief priests and scribes and elders, no less. So, you know, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, their job, right, is to point people toward the Messiah's return. Like, that's the point of the religion that they were the leaders of, is to point people to the return of the Messiah. And so, for Jesus to say that he, the Messiah, would be killed by these people, it didn't make any sense at all. It was ridiculous. It was scandalous. It was unthinkable. It was nonsense. So Peter, trying to be the voice of reason, because the sky is still up and the ground is still underneath, Peter trying to be the voice of reason, pulls Jesus aside and asks him, how could these people whose only job was to prepare the people for the coming of the Messiah, how could they turn around and kill the Messiah that they were preparing the people to have? Peter was making sense, he thought. Of course, Jesus has a different way of looking at it, because being the Messiah is not all it was cracked up to be. And Jesus replies with one of his most famous and surprising lines, "Get behind me, Satan!" Peter's good day turned around pretty quick. Went from being the rock on which the church would be founded to being the Satan that is a stumbling block, focusing on human things, not on divine things, getting in the way of God's will for the world. The cross, Jesus says, if you want to follow me, take up your cross and follow me. Take up your cross. He meant the crosses that Romans used to kill people. It was a very weird thing to say. Take up your cross means go and die in this way. Now, over the centuries, the cross has come to mean many things. I looked it up in our confirmation materials, confirmation starting this fall. Get your kids signed up or whatever. In our confirmation materials, it says the cross reminds us that grace is not cheap and that death does not win. Even though the cross was an instrument of death, death itself does not win. And grace is not cheap. Grace costs something. Cost death on a cross. There's no confirmation age kids here right now, but if there were, they could remember that for the spring of 2019 when that particular lesson will be taught. Lutheran professor and pastor Caroline Lewis writes a helpful column that I read this week. She talked about the cross as a crossroads, as an intersection, where different things come together. I haven't thought about it in this way in a while. So I'm going to read you an extended quotation from her, because I think this was interesting. She says, "Before the cross was the symbol it came to be, it was a reminder of this very moment, this moment right here in our gospel lesson when Jesus explains to his disciples for the first time what it means to be the Messiah, explains that he must suffer and die. So when Jesus did die, they remembered this. They remembered what Jesus had said to them, that he would suffer and die at the hands of the religious leaders, and that on the third day he would rise again. But they forgot about that part because it didn't make any sense at all. Anyway, Lewis continues. "The moment when you catch a glimpse of what life calling yourself a Christian really means and makes you hesitate, a time and place when you wear a cross, not just to show the world who you are, but to remind yourself of who the world needs you to be. Before the cross signified salvation, it was the instrument of condemnation. It was a sign for what happens when power is crossed, and when you choose to embody in the world a different expression of power. It meant the willingness to stand against power that silences and oppresses, the insistence on speaking up for those that the world would crucify, the courage to call a thing what it is. It meant the resolution to renounce those systems and institutions and leaders who choose themselves over others." She goes on, but I will end that lengthy quotation there. The cross, then, is not just the sign of salvation, but again, the cross is the reminder of the cost of that salvation. The cost that Jesus paid. And the reminder, as Jesus says today, that if you want to be followers of Jesus, you must take up your cross. Carry your cross. I tend to think of the cross as sort of the great reversal. I don't know if that phrase, if I got that somewhere, or I don't know. But the great reversal, the place where God most definitively turns death into life. God is in the business of turning death into life. That's kind of who God is. If you go through the entire Hebrew Scriptures, I listed just a few examples here of times that God turns death into life. The creation from nothing into life. Noah and the flood and his family surviving the flood, death into life. Abraham and Sarah, and even Hagar in the wilderness, God turns death into life. In the Exodus from Egypt to the Promised Land, God turns death into life. Ruth and Naomi being homeless and starving, essentially, and going back to their homeland and finding a home and finding God's favor, bringing death into life. Elijah and the starving widow, she says, well, I'll make this last cake and I'm going to die, but God brought a miracle, and Elijah and the widow lived on, death into life. David and Jonathan hiding in a field, David sure that he was going to die. But God brought death, turned death into life. In the Babylonian exile and, of course, the return, God turned death into life. Jonah preaching to the people of Nineveh, even though he hated them, he wanted them to be killed. And yet God brought life from that death. In the valley of dry bones with Ezekiel, God brought life from death. Isaiah proclaiming God's redemption of Israel, and on, and that's just in the Hebrew Scriptures, the ones I could think of off the top of my head when I sat down for 5 minutes. God brings death and turns it into life. That's what God does. God turns death into life. Somehow that was not enough, and so the cross, the symbol of Roman imperial power, the power to kill, publicly and painfully and shamefully to kill, so that no one would dare to disobey Rome. The most powerful symbol of death available in occupied Jerusalem in the time of Jesus. And God turned even the cross into a reminder that life is stronger than death. Death will never have the last word because God brings life from death. This is good news. Resurrection and life are God's promise to us forever, no matter what. And nothing you do and nothing done to you can keep God's love away from you. Nothing, not even the cross, or whatever the modern-day equivalent of the cross would be. And so the question, I think the question Jesus was asking of Peter and the disciples in our lesson today was this. Will you follow Jesus to the place where God turns death into life? Will you follow Jesus to the cross? In our lesson today, Peter would not. Not on this day. Peter, the rock on whom Jesus founded the church, against whom no evil could prevail, even Peter could not follow Jesus to the cross. See, Peter wanted to be right. And following Jesus, it turns out, is not about being right. Peter wanted to be powerful. Following Jesus is not about being powerful. Peter wanted to be comfortable. And Lord knows, following Jesus is not about being comfortable. Following Jesus is not about any of these things. Following Jesus is about going to the cross. It's about going to the scary place, the place you don't want to go, the place where you don't want to go, but God needs you to go so that you can be the presence of love and care and comfort to someone else. We follow Jesus to the cross, to the place where death
and fear threaten to overwhelm you, but we know that they will not. Because we've heard the end of this story. We've heard what happens after the 3 days, that Jesus was raised again, that life and resurrection are always the end of the story. And so we can have the faith and the courage and the foolishness to actually do this thing, to actually follow Jesus to the cross, to find the places in this world, as Lewis said, where the people are being crucified now, or the people who would be crucified now. To find those places, follow Jesus to those places, and be the presence of Jesus. This is what it is to follow Jesus. All those examples in our second reading from Romans, from Paul, it's all these. When I first read them, I thought, oh, isn't that nice? All those things are so nice. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Love one another with mutual affection. Rejoice in hope. Contribute to the needs of saints. Extend hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. It just goes on and on and on. I thought, well, isn't that lovely? But then I started looking more closely after reading this gospel lesson and thought, wow, a lot of that stuff is not fun. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought to what is noble in the sight of all. Never avenge yourself. Leave room for the wrath of God. If your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. A lot easier said than done. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If you've ever tried to overcome evil with good, you know it's not as much fun as it might sound like. If you've ever said, okay, this person, I really, really can't stand this person. But I need to go and deal with them. I need to go and handle this. Not to attack them and make myself feel better, but to really build a relationship, to really move forward. That is not a fun thing to do. But that is what we are called to do. That is the life that Jesus has set forth for us. It's not the life of easy, happy, clappy, rah-rah Jesus. That's not the God that we believe in. That's not the Jesus who became human on this earth. We trust in the grace of God. We follow Jesus to the cross. Amen.